Good evening, everybody. Welcome. Despite the snow, it is a real invocation of your Mesias Nefesh, and there's an interesting story in the Gemara that I think I might have mentioned once, and sometimes you can tell the story and it ends up being condescending, and that's not my goal. So the Gemara tells a story about that people, when they go to a shir, we're talking about men, not women, let's talk about men. When men go to a shir, they don't really get reward for going to for learning in the shir that they're going to, because they fall asleep during the shir. But they get reward for going to, for the walking to the shir, or the Gemara says, talks about duchka, the pressure of being in a place that's crowded with a lot of people and being in a stuffy place, so that they get the reward for, even if they don't remember anything. So you certainly remember everything, I say. But even regardless of that, the fact that you come to a shir in cold, icy, frigid, what's this one called? Linus? L-I-N-U-S, that's his name? That was Juno was last week, and this week I think it's Linus. Thank you for coming in the snow. Tonight we're going to continue. We started last week the halachas of korea ripping, and we're going to continue that tonight. We'll review for the first 2 minutes. First of all, welcome to the people who haven't been here before. Welcome, and I want to thank an anonymous sponsor for tonight's shir. Tonight is the shloshim of Dr. Yossi Herbert, Avram Yosef Ben Shalom, my next-door neighbor's father, Olav HaShalom, and learning this evening, and the freshmen are sponsored in honor of his Lili Nishmaso, so our learning should be an Ilan Neshama for Avram Yosef Ben Shalom. Last week we learned that all malachas, all 39 malachas, have to be constructive. And therefore, if something's an act of destruction, then by definition, it cannot be asur d'oraisa. So if, let's say, I don't like you, and I therefore take a baseball bat and don't hit you, but break a hole in your wall, that's not called building a doorway. It's called breaking your house down. And therefore, that's not going to be a malacha. If, however, my intent would be to build a doorway, that same act of taking a baseball bat and breaking a hole in your wall, which is would be constructive, not destructive, would constitute an issur d'oraisa. So we said that korea, by definition, is going to have to be, you're ripping something apart. It's only going to be a malacha d'oraisa if you're ripping for something to do something productive afterwards. So we saw that in the Mishnah, they ripped when there was a little hole, like a worm ate through a part of the curtain. There'd be a little hole. Sometimes when you want to neatly sew that up, you have to rip a little bit more so that you could sew it up in a neat, tidy, sewing way. That's as far as the malacha is the oraisa. We also saw that just like tofer, sewing, did not just apply to sewing a needle with thread and fabric, it also applied to gluing anything together, stapling things together. Similarly, the sister or the cousin or the opposite malacha of korea, which is tearing, would equally apply not just for ripping fabric, but also ripping apart papers that are pasted together, ripping apart papers that are stapled together, and basically separating any things that, if you have something that's united, separating it will be korea, will be ripping it. That's going to be the malacha of ripping. Last week, we talked for the second half of the shir to discuss how toilet paper could or should or can be ripped. We saw that ripping toilet paper, even if it's not on perforations, the toilet paper itself probably would constitute an issur d'oraisa. And we saw that if a person finds themselves in a place where there's no toilet paper, the Shmir Shabbos Kilchatzos suggests that they find some other kind of... I know, no one really liked this part so much. They should try to find some other paper if they can. And if no other paper, even, you know, loosely paper, is not available, then one would be able to figure out a way to rip this toilet paper. What do you mean? It's an issur d'oraisa. So there are two steps to do it. First of all, if we do an issur d'oraisa with a shinui, with a significant shinui, with a marked change, that will knock it down to be only issur d'rabbanan. So the Shmir Shabbos suggested that we should sort of, again, I forgot to do my roll of toilet paper tonight, we should sort of hold the roll of toilet paper with our elbow and use the other elbow to rip it. That will be an issur d'rabbanan. But wait, you're not allowed to do issur d'rabbanan on Shabbos? Oh. Chazal also have a different tenet. That is that they are concerned with human hygiene, the people being able to, you know, be self-respecting people who are clean and hygienic, and therefore, see, that's what we call kavod habrios. Kavod habrios doesn't just mean honoring people. Kavod habrios means being able to maintain a certain modicum of self-respect. So if you have that self-respect that we want you to have, and it's only us to drabanan, so if something's only us to drabanan, to maintain the self-respect will allow you to violate an isur drabanan in this circumstance, and therefore halacha l'maisa, one, if there's nothing else available, would be permitted to tear the toilet paper with a shinui and use it accordingly. That was all review last week. Right now, to start tonight's halachos, I want to talk about something that I never knew was mutter, and there's a great kula, series of kulas, that are going to come out from a very simple idea. Let's start with two lines in the Shulchan Aruch, two separate points in the Shulchan Aruch that we might not understand, and from those we'll build a tremendous leniency in the halachas of ripping. Says the Shulchan Aruch, did you ever, we don't roast, when we barbecue stuff, we usually barbecue just like a little piece of steak or a little, you know, fillet of, you know, chicken or a hot dog or a hamburger. We don't, you know, we don't barbecue large sides of beef. But did you ever see, let's say Thanksgiving time, a turkey that has like a netting around it? You know what I'm talking about? Like, do they have turkey in Canada? They don't have turkey. Okay, different Thanksgiving, right? So the Shulchan Aruch says that when you have this sheep or oaf that you roast, otherwise known as a turkey, let's say, and it's wrapped in a, it's not really wrapped, it's sort of tied together with a netting or some strings. Shulchan Aruch says you're allowed to cut those strings for this meat that you're roasting. Similarly, next scenario that the Shulchan Aruch says is, let's say you have figs or dates. I always get confused. Figs. Let's say you have figs that you want to ripen. So nowadays, how do you ripen figs? You don't. You don't eat figs. And even if you do, they're either ripe or they're not ripe. What they would do is the following. They would take date branches, palm branches, picture a palm branch, and, right, big, like a what's it called in the middle, spine down the middle, and outside of the, you're from Florida, you have these, right, outside your house? Yeah?
Palm tree?
Right, so you have palm trees, you're from LA, you probably have the same thing. I'm from Washington Heights, we don't. So you take those long leaves from the, coming off the spine of the palm branch, and sort of like look like what a lulav, before lulav, you know, when it starts out as a lulav and then the lulav spreads out. So those strings, leaves, were taken off the spine and they were made into a basket, a disposable basket. Inside those baskets they would put figs and the figs would ripen in this disposable basket. And some of them would like knot it or tie it on top. I don't know if they knotted the palm leaves together or they tied a string around it and they would have the figs ripening inside. Says the Shulchan Aruch that if you have this little basket made out of palm branches, it's called a chotelet, choselas. And says the Shulchan Aruch, you're allowed to tear this string. It says that there's a string around. You're allowed to tear this string and rip these palm branches on Shabbos. Now the question is, why are you allowed to rip these strings? Why are you allowed to rip the strings around the barbecued chicken or turkey or sheep, for that matter? Let's think back to last week. Or if you weren't here last week, let's think back to 4 minutes ago. What's the whole problem of ripping? The whole problem of ripping is that, on a Doraisa level, is that you're ripping, the melacha doesn't end there. It's korea almenas litfor. It's ripping. Again, there has to be a constructive purpose. And what would that constructive purpose be? Ripping so that I can subsequently put it back together again. Sew it back together again. So wait a second. If I have something, a string for example, let's say you rip a string and you want to now put it back together again. What do you do if you want to tie, I'm sorry, I gave it away. What do you do if you want to connect a string that has been disattached from itself? You sew it back together again? No, you do that with fabric. You do that maybe with paper, you glue paper together. But if you have a string and another string that used to be one string, and it ripped apart, what do? You don't sew it. You don't attach it. Maybe you tie it, but that's a whole different malacha. And therefore, since the concept of korea al menas litfar, ripping on a derais level, is only if it's going to be for the purpose of sewing it back together again, that whole idea doesn't and cannot apply by a string. Strings aren't reattached to one another by sewing, by reattaching. If anything, they're tied, but that's a whole different thing. So therefore, the whole malacha doesn't really apply to string. And therefore, we come out with a gigantic kula that it is permitted, lichatchila, on Shabbos, to rip all the string you want. Randomly, for no reason, you just walk over to string and just rip it. Why? Because you feel like it. Or to, you know, make your frumi roommate, you know, freak out a little bit. Or to prove to your parents that you're not as frum as you think you have become when, wherever you came back from your overseas. So again, the reason is that korea midaraisa is only korea almanas litzvar for the purpose of sewing, and since a string is never put together by sewing it, the whole concept daraisa of korea doesn't even apply. You see, if I rip a jacket, so even if I don't plan on ripping, even if I don't plan on sewing it back together again, the ripping that I did could potentially, it won't be daraisa. If I just rip a jacket because I'm angry, let's say, because I'm bored, so that won't be daraisa because I don't plan on sewing it up again. But it will be darabanan because it's the kind of ripping that you potentially could or would or might sew back together again. But a string, you never do that. You just don't sew string together again. And therefore, the malacha will not even be also darabanan. It will be mutar lechatchila to rip string on Shabbos. Yes?
Toilet paper is not made to be put back together.
Toilet paper is paper. Paper that gets separated, you can tape it together. String, the whole concept of the string by definition is never put together. You're saying that, you're just giving a very specific...
Well, what's the difference between taping back together and tying it together?
Okay, tying is a different malacha entirely.
Kosher.
Yeah. Kosher is a different malacha entirely.
It's a whole different category.
When we talk about korea and its opposite, korea is the opposite of tofer, and korea, tofer, korea. Ripping and sewing. Disattaching and attaching.
Taping is in that category.
Kosher is a different world, yeah.
For tofer, are there specific mediums of attachment that are not considered, like glue is considered tofer?
Glue is considered tofer d'oraisa, the Rambam says, yes.
So what's not?
What's not?
What type of medium that you would use in
the... If it would be temporary, then it would not be also d'oraisa.
So like
then
a
it might
pin?
Be. What?
So like a safety pin.
A safety pin that was shared 2 or 3 weeks ago, we saw as machlok, because I was proud maker, then we could be make to use a safety pin for whatever you want. That's what we can have. 1,000% yes. If you have a tag, those plastic little, you know, things that they have that you wonder how they get it in. If it's fat on one side and fat on the other side and it goes through your garment, it's some magic. So they have some special gun that shoots that little, you know, that little white plastic string, I don't know what to call it. And it has that little, like,
peg
on one side and peg on the other side, and on it is hanging, you know, Bloomingdale's or Lowman's or wherever else you might shop, or in the middle. And that you can tear lichatchila on Shabbos, yes.
And you can also cut it?
You could cut it, yes. And if you need to cut it with a knife, 100%, if you need to cut it with scissors, this would be an example of using a davar mukhtza, a klishim lachta l'isser, for an alternate permitted purpose, which would be mutter. So if you can't get it with your fingers, and you can't get it with your teeth, or you value your teeth, and it's not going to be effective, and a knife, you just don't want to slice your fingers off, so you want to use the scissors, it would be mutter lechatchila to use the scissors if you can't do it in a more, you know, way of avoiding scissors. If you need scissors, you'd be able to use scissors to cut off a tag. Another great thing to do while somebody else is watching. To prove that you're open-minded. On the other hand, you have to be careful with these things, because people who are not sensitive, and then actually the Ramah talks about this, that when you do things, some of the things that we're talking about, of yes cutting, of yes ripping, you have to sort of be sort of sensitive, because people who are not as learned as yourselves might be watching you and might deduce that you're just allowed to rip things on Shabbos, and we know you're not allowed to rip things. A string, yes, but everything else in the world, no. So you just have to be careful, maybe not to let people watch what you do. Yeah.
What about the size sticker that comes on the sweater?
The sticker that's stuck onto the sweater.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, yeah, so, yeah, so all of the, I don't know if it's Children's Place or Gap, yeah, Children's Place, all of the Children's Place clothing that we have, every single one comes with that sticker in size, and, you know, so that's not what we're talking about. That's a question of pulling a sticker off a beged. So I'm going to get out of it by saying, oh, I'm sorry, that was 3 weeks ago when we talked about Topher. I don't remember. That might be more of an issue. That might be more of a serious issue. Wait, at least
you said, yeah, you said you can't do it.
I said I can't do it. Right, you emailed me about this. Yeah. Right, I think that would be an issue. That's a problem because you're something that's glued to something else. I know it's not a strong glue, but you're ripping it off. Now,
what if you put it back on and you took it off, put it back on, and now you realize it's Shabbos, but you've already taken it off once. So
I don't know if that
would.
That just might make it more temporary, but I don't know if that will be. And I don't think it will be also deraisa, but I think until I research further, that should be avoided. Yes. One more question.
If you have a string hanging, you're allowed to pull it off.
Chas v'shalom, if you have a string hanging out of your garment such that it's part of your garment, that would be possibly a serious, that would be a very serious issue, because A, it's part of the garment, so that would be like ripping a piece of a garment.
So what's an example when you pull a string?
Oh, so I'll give you a few examples of strings that you could rip. So first of all, the strings around the turkeys that we mentioned, if you ever see hard soldiers like smoked salamis, also sometimes have those strings. Again, we're not saying you're allowed to rip it because you want to get the food inside. That maybe we'll talk about next week. We're saying you're allowed to just rip. Bakery boxes. No one goes to the bakery anymore, but in the old days when people went to the bakery and they had that red and white string that they would tie, and you'd always try to figure out how to get that knot out on Shabbos, especially when you pull the wrong string and that's a real double knot. You just rip it, without a problem, no questions asked. The hand matzah boxes, some of the matzah bakeries for the hand matzah on Pesach, also tie a string around it. You could rip that, no problem. You don't have to try to figure out how to untie it. Sometimes you purchase shoes or gloves or socks, and they're sold in a pair, and there's this plastic, usually plastic, sometimes it's some other material, holding it together. Sometimes when you buy a garment, they have this thing that you can't get off, it's attached to a button, and you think you can just like unwind it and get it off, and sometimes it doesn't. And there's like a label, a garment, the brand attached to it. No? Okay, only men, I guess, then. So that, you could cut that off. And again, if you want to cut those socks apart or those gloves apart or those shoes apart with a scissor, if you need to, you could even use a scissor to cut all these strings. One question one might ask is if you have a pair of gloves or socks or shoes or like Crocs or one of these flip-flops that you buy at one of these 99-cent stores that come attached, so you might ask, wait a second, I understand you're allowed to cut it because it's just a string and there's no korea by a string, but what other problem might there be? Excellent, maybe that's makom patish because you're putting the finishing touch. Until then you had a flip-flop that you couldn't use because you wouldn't be flipping and flopping, you'd be sort of wobbling like a duck, so that it's not usable, and now you're making it, yes, usable. That should be makom patish, the malacha of the worldwide universal malacha, putting the finishing touch on an item. The answer is that is not considered makom patish.
You can use them technically.
Exactly, because the shoe was a finished shoe. The mitten was a finished mitten. The glove was a finished glove. The sock was a finished sock. And then after it was already finished, they just wanted to hold them together. That's not making it usable. Makom patish, that malacha of makom patish, is only when you take something that's not yet usable and you put the finishing touch to make it usable. So, for example, you have a shoe without a shoelace, you put a shoelace in it. That's making an unusable shoe usable. That would be makom patish, as we discussed months ago. But,
since the glove was usable before they put the string in
it. Exactly. It was a completely finished glove. After the glove was completely finished, then they decided to attach it to another so it doesn't get lost in shipping and in the market supply chain. That will be mutter to rip apart. What are you saying, Leva?
No, I was just
moving. Okay. I will point out the Shemir Shabbos Kol Chasa does urge people to tear or separate whatever clothing they need to before before Shabbos if they do remember. So if you do get yourself a new pair of flip-flops or socks or gloves before Shabbos, you should try to cut them apart before Shabbos. But if you didn't, as we mentioned, it is going to be mutter to sort of destructively just cut it apart and it's separated. The issue of makor patish applies also to a price tag. A price tag, one might argue, wait, when you take that price tag off, you're making the shirt, which was heretofore until now not really usable because it had a price tag on it, and now you're making it usable. So that should be makor patish, maybe. So the same answer is going to apply, that since the shirt was finished, the sweater was finished, after it was completely finished, they put on a tag to make it, to identify it, to know how much it's going to cost, and they want the tag to come off anyway when you wear it. So it's already completely finished before they put on the tag, so it's not going to be makor patish to remove that tag.
In the case of the tag, they stick in the buttonhole, theoretically they made it unusable. Really.
That's right, but it was finished. After it was completely finished, they did some foolish thing to it to make it unusable again, and now you're just making it back to usable. So I don't know if that would matter much, because it already had reached its usability. Yeah.
Why is it better to do it before Shabbos?
I don't remember. I don't have the notes. I cut and pasted the top of the Shulchan Shmir Shabbos Kilchasa, where he gives you the halachas, and the bottom, where he gives you the explanations, I just didn't cut and paste. So I don't remember why he said it's better to do it before.
A tag that's sewn in would be an issue, though.
Ooh, tag that's sewn in is serious stuff. Yeah, that would be Korea.
Like the shot.
And what I mean by that is that even though it's a string, when I say the word string is allowed to be ripped, I'm only talking about a string, an independent string in a vacuum. I'm not talking about a string that's part of a piece of clothing that's embedded, that's meshed, that's part of a weave, that's part of... Once you have something that's sewn into clothing and you cut that string, that's cutting something that's part of a piece of clothing, that would be an issur possibly d'oraisa.
Even if it's added on afterwards, after it's a usable product.
Once you start getting sewing it into a garment, I'm nervous. Yeah. Not sure if it would be d'oraisa d'rabbanan, but I think that would be a problem. Some halacha that probably won't apply for you to you too often is, let's say, your tzitzis. Guy asked me the shah this morning. He had a pair of tzitzis, and he was going to his first day at work, and he had one tzitz, one string that was longer than the other. There are eight strings and eight hanging down in each corner, and one was very long, and the other seven were shorter. He wanted to know, could he cut it off? Because the reason why he asked me, not Shabbos, today was Monday morning, is because it's a tradition not to cut tzitzis with metal. In the same way that you don't put a metal on the Mizbeach to cut the stones on the Mizbeach. They have to be cut with some other means, because metal is something that is shortens a person's life, that kills a person, that causes injury, so Hashem doesn't want it on the Mizbeach. Similarly, there's a tradition not to cut tzitzis with metal. So I told him, I remember my father, I was in my parents' house in Brooklyn, and I had a similar situation where one string was longer, and I asked my father, Daddy, do you have like a good plastic knife? Said no, and then like 5 minutes later, he comes over to me with a broken piece of glass. He said, "Here, Uri, you could use this. It's very sharp. Don't cut yourself." And I use a sharp shard of glass to cut the edge of my tzitzis. So, if you want to cut your tzitzis, you know what I mean? If you want to cut your tzitzis on Shabbos, so again, that's a string that should be okay. I didn't see that anywhere. I'm just applying what we're learning together. However. Two places, we mentioned some that you have to be careful about. If, again, there's a part of a string that's coming out of a, you know, the weave of your clothing, or it's a string that's coming out of whatever, or a button. A button's loose, and there's a string there. You cannot cut off that string. That will be serious. That's already become part of the beged. That's not going to be a string that you're allowed to cut off. And similarly, let's say you want to cut a string to size. Let's say you need a... tie something around something, you want to cut a string to size for whatever needs you have. Let's say you want to, what do you want to do?
Measure something.
You want to measure something, you want to tie. Let's say you go to Kiddush and they have balloons and your little sister wants to take a balloon home on her wrist. Do you remember that when you were little, you used to tie balloons to your wrist so they don't fly away? So okay, not tying a belt, you know, you won't tie a permanent knot, but could you have to get a string that will go around her wrist or a little ribbon? And you don't want it to be 5 feet long, so you cut yourself a string that'll be, you know, just right for a, you know, 5-year-old kid's wrist. So there you're cutting to size. Cutting to size is a different malacha entirely. of mechatech. Mechatech is cutting to size. We're learning korea, which is ripping, tearing, but it's a specific cutting for a specific size. That's a different malacha of mechatech, which perhaps we'll learn in a few weeks. Along similar lines, I saw a very interesting kula. Baruch atah Adonai Eloheinu Melech Haolam she'hakol nehiyah bidvaro. Thank you. Shmir Shas Kil Chasa in Perek Lamed Hey, footnote 50, talks about spider webs. Spider webs, are they mukta? Let's say, maybe they are mukta, but that's not really a problem, because we know that you're allowed to move mukta in all kinds of ways. You could blow mukta, you could, if you need to get out of your way, you could move mukta indirectly, like take some empty soda water bottle or cup and move mukta if it's indirect movement, and it's, you don't like where it is, it's inconveniencing you. So, yes, it's mukta, you maybe shouldn't move away a web with your hand, but could you, when you destroy or move away a spider web, you're ripping it, aren't you? Are you going to be allowed to move away or rip a spider web on Shabbos? So this Shmir Shas Kol Chasa I just mentioned to you, 35 and 50, suggests that it's going to be mutter, because sort of on the heels of what we're saying, that its strings are not considered ripping, he said, so too, when you sort of cut apart a web, you're not really tearing things apart. You're sort of just, I don't really know. You're separate. I don't know much enough about webs, but the way they're connected to each other, it's not really one long, I don't really know what the reason is, but he says that spider webs are not, he says they just sort of come apart with touching them lightly. That's not considered korea, that's not the malach of ripping apart. The next application of korea that I want to talk about for a moment, which also is going to be another interesting leniency, is the following. Ripping, this malacha of ripping, I can't rip or tear, does it only apply to things like fabric and paper, or does it even apply to hard, solid items? So for example, if I take this table, can I give it a karate chop on Shabbos and break it in half? So if I had a piece of paper and I wanted to rip it in half, that would be korea. If I would do the same thing with a table, is that going to be korea? Well, let's just think about it for a second. What does the word korea mean in English? Tear or rip. Would you call giving a karate chop to a table tearing or ripping? No. I would call it breaking, if anything, right.
You wouldn't sew it.
And you certainly wouldn't sew it back together again. Or you would glue it back together again. But the Minchas Chinuch writes that Zeh Pashut, that's not called, he says both sides of the coin, Tofer, sewing, or Korea, ripping. He says that's Pashut, that it only applies to things that are soft, or leather, things that are subject to, as Rachel said, things that are subject to sewing together. But when you have something that's hard, you have, he's talking about klicheres, or a piece of wood, or some pottery that isn't soft and isn't normally sewn together, so there will be neither a prohibition to separate, break it apart, nor will there be a prohibition to connect them and put them together. That's what the Minchas Chinuch says. And therefore, according to this, you should be able to do a bunch of things that you never thought you were allowed to do on Shabbos. You know, did you ever walk home from shul during the fall and there's a twig there? We always try to sort of not break it on purpose. Why? You can't break things on Shabbos, right? Guess what? Wrong. You can't break things on Shabbos. If it's not soft, if it's not fabric, if you're not ripping something apart, you're just cracking something, cracking is permitted on Shabbos. Now, you're not allowed to destroy something that is useful. That's a separate problem. So I can't take a bookshelf or a table and give it a karate chop because I'm ruining something, I'm destroying an usable item. But a twig, which is not a usable item anyway, there's no iser at all in, as I'm walking, yes, it's mukta. So that's why you can't break it with your hands, but you could break it with your feet. You could go over to a twig on Shabbos on purpose and snap it in half and break it in half for no reason other than you want to show that you know halacha. Or everyone else is going to think you don't, but really you do. Similarly, if you have, you have to make sure a few things. Let's just go through the different side concerns that we might be concerned with. So first of all, if you have a kli that you break, and it's no longer usable as a kli, it's no longer usable as a table, no longer usable as a bookshelf, that might be the iser of soter, of destroying, of dismantling, like a house or something, making something unusable. So you have to avoid that. And on the other hand, if you have some that when you break it in half, now it does become usable as a, for a certain use. Let's say you have a, what do you get an example of that?
What? The candles.
Okay, yeah, let's say you have those Hanukkah, those really overpriced $30, I have no idea why, they should be more than like seven, those $30 disposable Hanukkah things, you have to crack off the top and light it. Does everyone know what I'm talking about? Yeah? You're all sucked in to find that. Okay. So cracking that, you're cracking something off. I don't know exactly what it looks like. When you crack that off, you might be making a kli. So you're cracking something off. Cracking's no problem. Oh, but you're making a kli. That's a problem. So you have to avoid either destroying a kli, in the case of breaking a bookshelf or breaking a table. And the inverse, you have to be careful. You're not going to make a kli by breaking. But putting those side points aside, if you're not making a kli or breaking a kli, you just have some twig that you want to crack in half, it's solid. Breaking together solid, breaking apart solids, says the Minchas Chinuch, is not an iser of Korea and is not usser. Once again, we'll remind ourselves that whenever you want to break something to a specific size or a specific shape, there you'll get in trouble with a different malacha, the malacha that we mentioned earlier, not of Korea, of breaking, of tearing, but the malacha of mechateich, which is a malacha again that we haven't learned yet, which is an issue of cutting or breaking something to a specific size. Yes, Ariana?
So you can crack ice, like when you're walking outside?
Excellent question. Can you crack ice? The answer is like this. You are, the Shulchan Aruch says, the Mishnah says, if I remember correctly, or the Gemara, Mishnah says that you're not allowed to chop ice such that you, in order to make it, you know, liquefy. So let's say you, my kids like this. You get the Merinos cherry ices, and you prefer cherry soup than cherry ices, right? So you chop and chop and chop. Eventually, you end up with cherry soup. So that's awesome. However, if you want to chop ice because you want a half a piece of ice, and you don't really care about the size, you just, the ice is too big for your cup. I don't know.
Or if you're walking.
I'm sorry, I misunderstood. I thought you were talking about a piece of ice in your cup. I'm sorry. Oh, so could you chop ice on Shabbos? I want to give a shiur about that. I have no recollection of what I said. could you chop ice on Shabbos?
Like if you see ice, you know those like the thin ice?
Yeah, you have. God forbid, you know, it could happen if it freezes over Friday night. You have snow or whatever, rain, it freezes over Friday night. Shabbos morning, there's a sheet of ice on your driveway, your walkway, and your sidewalk. So you want to, there's an Eruv, so there's no problem of, you know, taking out the ice chopper. So could you chop that ice on Shabbos?
Or just with your foot.
That will make it even better, because you're not getting involved with
your hand.
Or break an icicle with your hand off the bottom of a car, right?
Or your house.
A kid in you. right, it's a solid. So there's no Korea on a solid. It's not to a specific size or shape. You're not dismantling something. You're not making something. So what could be the problem? Sounds like it's okay. I'd love to just follow up with an email just to confirm that. But halacha l'maisa, only because it's the season now, the Shir Shas Kilchasa does permit a person, if they have iced sidewalks, to salt them on Shabbos. If you need to. Yeah, if you need to. Because, yes, salt might be mukta, but there's a halach in Hilchos Mukta that says that if there's a danger to rabim, which, for example, the Shulchan Aruch is talking about, let's say there's a spiky thorn, a big thorn somewhere. Somebody, the people passing by could get hurt by this thorn, or there's a gacheles, a coal, a burning coal that somebody might step on and hurt themselves. So even though they are mukta, but if there's a nezek for rabim, then they could, you can move it. So in my house, that happens. Let's say we have money on the floor. So we have a 10-month-old baby. If you have a penny on the floor, so that's definitely a serious, you know, health concern. So, of course, you could always move money with your feet if you want to, but could I pick up that penny with my hands? So definitely if there are a few kids, for one baby, would we do it? I don't remember. If you have a few kids, a few little children around, you definitely could. If it's one baby, then I don't remember. It's allowed. But in your case, where it's outside on a sidewalk, where there are a lot of people, so even if, let's say, salt would be mukta, for a nezek that might occur chas shalom to rabim, to a population of people walking by or walking into your house, then you would be able to violate the isser of mukta. Meaning, let me rephrase that. Chachamim never made a takana of mukta in a situation where there would arise danger to a number of people. And therefore you'd be able to take the salt and, if you need salt, the pavement on Shabbos. Yeah.
With the ice, if you have two ice cubes that are stuck together, then you break them apart, would that be cutting it to like an exact
That's
shape?
A great question. I don't know the answer. I hear what you're saying. You're saying, if I have two ice cubes, which we always have, right? You have two ice cubes frozen together. If you break it, but what do you care? You don't really care if it's how big it is. Just because there's a place where there's an easier place for it to crack in half, you don't really need it there. Like, you want a specific size ice cube? If. Did everyone see those, if you ever go to Bed Bath & Beyond, they have these ice cube molds that are shapes like, you know, teddy bears and whatever other shapes. If you have those and two shapes get together and you care about like how each one looks, then I hear. But if it's just like, no one really cares about
it. You need it to like fit into your glass or water bottle.
That
or
could be a problem. Let's say you have a water bottle and you want to fit into the top of the water bottle and you want to break it apart to fit in, that might be cutting it to size. Then maybe one could argue that would be mechate, but I really haven't seen anyone discuss breaking ice. Everything that I'm saying is on my own, you know, my own whim, so I don't want to take responsibility for anything I'm saying about ice. But that's what it sounds like. Yeah. Another question? Okay. If you have a piece of wood, if you have a, what do they call it, toothpick, that for whatever reason it's convenient for you to break it in half. Can you break it in half on Shabbos? 100%. You're not making something unusable, you're not breaking a kli, you're not making a kli. Just breaking. Breaking is mutter on Shabbos. The only thing you have to be careful of is if you chop wood, chopping wood, it looks not, it doesn't look good. It looks like the kind of thing you do on a weekday that's called halachically uvdin dechol, an activity of weekdays. So you don't want to chop wood. But to break wood on Shabbos, breaking wood is mutter on Shabbos.
What about fingernails? Or like
fingernails, thank you very, very, very much. It's a very important question. Fingernails, cuticles, and hair. Cuticles both from the mouth, which is, this is the worst time of the year to discuss it, and cuticles from the fingers. Very, very important to discuss because this is very serious. The malacha that we're talking about is tearing, ripping items. When you talk about ripping something off something that grows, off an organic organism, like a person or an animal, that's a different malacha entirely. That's gozes. Gozes is in the Mishkan when they would have a sheep. How do you get wool? You have a little sweater. How do you get wool? You cut the wool off a sheep. That's gozes. That's shearing. Whenever you pull off something that's growing from a human body or an animal body, that's an issa d'oraisa of gozes. So therefore, if you have, let's say, a little bit of skin on your lips, which happens all the time this time of the year, to pull that off is very, very, that might be an issa d'oraisa, believe it or not. Because that's the same as pulling off hair, cutting hair on Shabbos, cutting off the wool from a sheep, pulling off a cuticle, cutting a nail. All these things are all applications of gozes, and they're very, that could be an issue there.
What about like dead skin that's like falling off already on its own, but you just
As long as it's attached, it's a problem.
Okay.
That's the simple assumption. I tell my kids that's the reason why the habit of biting nails is so bad. I'm not worried about what your nails are going to look like. But if you have a habit of biting nails, then it's very dangerous because on Shabbos it's hard to break it. It's a habit because it's hard to break. So if a person has a habit of biting the nails, they have to be very careful on Shabbos that they don't continue to bite their nails on Shabbos, because, or pick their nails, or pick whatever on Shabbos, because that would be a problem. That could be a problem with those days. Thank you very much for that. It's very important. Yeah.
Like, what if you, like, just, like, so you wipe your mouth?
Yeah, so somebody was asking me that exact question yesterday, 2 days ago. What happens if you sort of, your mouth is uncomfortable, it's, you know, it's dry and whatever, so you sort of, well, what's your goal? Is your goal to get rid of it, or your goal is just to wipe your mouth? If your goal is just to wipe your mouth and it may or may not come off, that might be mutter. If your goal is you want to get rid of it and you just don't want to do it, like, you don't want to pull something up because that's usher, so you're just going to wipe it. If it comes off, that will still be awesome.
So, like, let's say you just, like, subconsciously go like this, and it comes off, it's totally...
If it wasn't to remove anything that's attached to a person's body, then it would be mutter. They just wipe their mouth, and something, a piece of their skin happens to come off, or they, you know, they scratch their head gently, and as a hair comes out, that's not going to be awesome. That's not a problem. Okay. If you look at the tables in front of you, some of the tables, you'll notice that there's a sticker on the table left over from Yom Kippur. So first of all, do we have any volunteers? You don't have to tell me now. We need some volunteers to help remove the stickers that are a little stuck on these tables and the benches upstairs. So if you want to volunteer some time to help with the stickers, please tell me. The next question I want to discuss is, would you be able to volunteer for the shul on Shabbos? Could you remove these stickers from the table on Shabbos? Why yes, why no? Well, let's start with why no. You're ripping. Right? If you have a sticker on a piece of paper, let's back up even further. We learned 3 weeks ago that you can't take a sticker and put it onto paper. We learned last week you can't take a sticker and pull it off paper. Putting a sticker on paper is gluing papers together. That's tofer, d'oraisa. Ripping a sticker off paper, that's ungluing something that's glued together, that's korea, probably d'oraisa. That's ripping apart something d'oraisa. The question is that only going to be by things that are like paper and fabric? Or what about when you have a soft sticker on a hard table? Will we apply korea even when you're connecting something soft to something hard? So here, a place where it comes up is the following. Do you ever go on a picnic or see people at a picnic and they have their water cooler? And inside their water cooler they have a bottle of, let's say, Poland Spring, right? Poland Spring. You have it in the water cooler. What happens to the ice in the water cooler at some point? The ice turns to water. And then you have this Poland Spring water bottle sitting in a puddle of water. What happens when this piece of paper, the Poland Spring paper, is sitting in the water for some time? The paper starts coming off. Is that something that we have to be concerned about on Shabbos? Not to let the paper come off? So here is a discussion that Shmiras Shabbos Kilchasa talks about. If we are worried about the connection, ripping off something soft, paper, from something hard like a bottle. I assume the same would apply to a sticker that's attached to a table or upstairs to the benches. So the Shmiras Shabbos Kilchasa says that, you know, it's not so terrible. Because first of all, you're not really doing it actively. You're sort of putting it in water and it sort of happens, you know, the paper comes off by itself. You didn't do it actively. The glue came off by itself. The paper sort of got weak and soft by itself. You didn't do it actively. Not only that, but it's not, you know, it's hard and soft. It's not like two soft things that you could sew together or that you could rip apart. It's hard and soft. I don't think that's such a problem. But that's only if it happens, like, naturally. Not if you actually are going to rip. You shouldn't actively rip paper off a bottle. And similarly, we're not going to, on Shabbos, rip a sticker off a hard surface either. Let's finish off with something that's going to answer the question you asked a few minutes ago. And this is a very, very important halacha that applies to Korea specifically, and it applies to all other 38 malachas. And it's something that comes up a lot in all different kinds of ways. You're familiar with the... Let me ask you the question. The question is, again, without getting gory, without getting too detailed, did you ever take, not Kleenex, cheapy tissues, and you blow your nose when you have a cold, and sometimes the tissue, like, rips? So without conjuring up an image in your mind too vividly, because it just doesn't help or anything, do you have to be careful on Shabbos that when you blow your nose, not to rip those cheap tissues? Or something a little bit more common, especially if you're in a yeshiva or an institution where they have paper towel dispensers. What happens when you pull the paper towels? They rip. What?
They always rip.
They always rip. That's going to be the question. Do they always, or do they, or might they? So the paper towels rip. Do you have to... We all are very careful on Shabbos to make sure that we take those paper towels that they don't rip. It's really the same question. Could I do this and be worried that, oh, it's going to rip? Could I blow my nose and worry, oh, it's going to rip? It's the same question. So here, we have to go back to the time of the Mishnah and understand how the children played ball in the time of the Mishnah. And I think I mentioned this once before. Did I mention this once before? How they played ball. They didn't have basketballs, tennis balls, blue balls, soccer balls, footballs. So what did they play with? I never mentioned how the kids used to play ball in the time of the Mishnah or Gemara. If I mentioned it, you definitely remember, so I guess I didn't mention it. So, very simple. You take a knife, you take a chicken, you cut off the head, and you have a ball. I did mention it. Yeah, I guess I did mention it. Okay. So, you cut off the head of a chicken, and you say, okay, go deep. And hopefully they, okay, we won't talk about yesterday's game, ran the upset yesterday, but that's how they used to play ball. Now, if you have a little... I have a 10-year-old son, so let's use a 10-year-old. You have a 10-year-old who wants to play ball, and he says, I love this chicken dearly. I have no interest in killing a chicken. All I want is the head to use for my football game. So what would you, as a mature adult, respond to that person on Shabbos morning? What? Hello, if you take off the head, it's going to die, right? You're not allowed to kill on Shabbos, right?
Doesn't survive a little bit.
What?
Doesn't survive a little bit.
That's an excellent question.
Another 2 months.
Yes, you're talking about Mike the Headless Chicken. Yeah. My student told me today that I should Wikipedia Mike the Headless Chicken. So I share that. Please Wikipedia Mike the Headless Chicken. Apparently, I don't want to get again not too gory because no one's ever going to come back again. Apparently, somebody chopped off the head of a chicken and left a certain part of the cerebral cortex intact, or not the cerebral cortex, or the cortex, whatever. Medulla, I guess, above the medulla and whatever else above it, such that the heartbeat still beat. And the whatever other vital functions kept on functioning for another 2 months or 4 months or something like that. Apparently, he fed it through a feeding tube, whatever. Just look on Mike the Headless Chicken, and then you'll get back to me. Sorry. I apologize for anybody who's not appreciating this. So, why is it important to understand Mike the Headless Chicken? Because the malacha is, there's a malacha not to kill on Shabbos. Did you kill somebody on Shabbos? Did you kill something on Shabbos? No, you just took off the head. But when you take off the head, what naturally happens? The chicken dies. That's called a psik ratio. The word psik means cut off, ratio means head. Psik ratio means I do one act, and something else which I wasn't intending to do happened automatically. For example, I opened up the refrigerator, and my intention was to open up the refrigerator. What ended up happening? A light went on. That wasn't my intended act. In philosophy, the philosophers talk about this concept where you intend to do something, and something else is going to happen definitely, but you don't really, that wasn't your goal. Are you responsible for that act, that second act? In philosophy, it's called double effect. Double effect, you're responsible for double effect, meaning I wanted to do A, and B, which wasn't what I intended to do, but will necessarily happen. So what's the halacha? If I, let's say, open up, I know the light is on in the fridge, but I'm going to say, that's not my goal, my intention is to open the fridge to get myself a cold drink of tomato juice. I want some cold tomato juice. Water you can drink warm. Tomato juice, you can't drink warm tomato juice. It doesn't work. So I want some cold tomato juice. You drink cold tomato, you drink warm tomato juice or not? I don't do that. Okay, fine. Just make sure. So you can't open. Could you open the door or not? Of course not. But if you open the door and light goes on, that would be us or me de? It's us or me de raisa. Yes. So in halacha, double effect is considered that you are responsible for that, midaraisa. Now, it's a lower level, it's not a doraisa that carries with it all the punishments of violating Shabbos. That's true. There's no, skila or kares, or even a carbon katas that has to be brought. None of that applies. But it's still, nevertheless, it's also doraisa. Now, that is only true. Let me finish this idea. That's only going to be true, that it's also daraisa to do A when B happens, what we call psik resha, if B is definitely going to happen. But what happens in the classical case that the Gemara talks about, when I pull a chair, let's say there's a Shabbos party on that side of the bungalow colony, and they have their ice cream and their pile of ice cream and their gummy bears, and I want to take my chair across the lawn in the bungalow colony or the backyard, and I'm going to take my chair. What's my goal? My goal is to get a chair to the Shabbos party. What ends up happening? I dig a little furrow in the ground, a little ditch in the ground with the legs of my chair, if it's a heavy enough chair, and that's choresh, that's plowing, that's making a hole in the ground, digging a hole in the ground. That's a melacha of choresh. So what was my intention? Get chair from here to Shabbos party. What ends up happening? What's the double effect? What's the B, that B that is caused by my act A, that I dug a burrow. So is that mutter or aser? So it really depends. If it's heavy enough that it will definitely cause a hole in the ground, that's a psik resha, that will be also midaraisa to bring my chair, or my bench, let's say, a heavy bench or heavy chair, to the Shabbos party. If, however, says the Gemara, you're not sure if it will or will not dig into the ground, it's not a 40-pound chair, it's a 12-pound chair. 12-pound chair doesn't always, make a hole in the ground. If it's very soft dirt, maybe it will. If it gets that part of the leg of the chair that's a little bit pointier, maybe it will. If it gets the flat part of the leg of the chair, if it's hard, the dirt is a little bit harder, then it won't. So it may or may not cause. So I'm doing Act A. I'm getting my chair from here to the Shabbos party. But B may or may not happen. The hole in the ground may or may not happen. That is called not a psik resha, which would be also daraisa. This is called a davar she'eno miskaved, something that you didn't intend to do. The halacha for a davar she'eno miskaved is that it is mutter entirely. In other words, if I plan to do A and B may or may not happen, there are two ingredients. You intend to do this and not that. And the second thing, the B, may or may not happen, that's called davar she'eno miskaved, something that you didn't have kavana for, that's mutter entirely. Let's take this lesson and now apply it to pulling out the paper towels from the paper towel dispenser. What's my goal? To rip a paper towel? No. My goal is to dry my hands, to take a paper towel to dry my hands. Now I ask you, will the paper towel definitely rip, or they might rip? Let's take it one step at a time. If you know they're definitely going to rip, every time you take it, it always rips. So that's a psik resha. I intended to take a paper towel to dry my hands, and it's definitely going to cause a rip. That's asur midaraisa. If, however, sometimes I take paper towels, they don't always rip. Depends how many paper towels are in there. Depends what angle I pull it at. It depends what pressure I apply when I pull. Depends if I pull with one hand, two. It depends. Sometimes yes, sometimes no. So then you have the two ingredients of I didn't intend to rip it, and it may not even rip. That's not a psik resha. That's a davar she'eno miskaved, and that is mutter l'chatchila. And therefore, halach l'maisa, if you go to the bathroom upstairs in this building, I'm assuming that not every time that you pull it does it rip. And most places, not every time that you pull it does it rip. It will be mutter l'chatchila to pull the paper towels, and you know what? If it rips, that's not your problem. You don't have to be careful not to rip the paper towels as you pull it out on Shabbos, because you weren't intending to rip, And even if it does rip it, and even whatever that thing that might happen rip, it's not definitely going to happen either. So you didn't have intention. Your kavanah wasn't to do it. And it may or may not have happened. That makes you not responsible whatsoever. And it's mutl l'chatchila to pull that paper towel and not be concerned if it will or will not rip. Let's go to the other example we asked about. We'll finish with the next point or two. If you blow your nose, do you intend to rip cheap tissues with this? By blowing your nose? Absolutely not. In fact, you usually prefer it not to rip. So you weren't intending to do it. And will it definitely rip? No, it won't definitely rip. Sometimes it does. Sometimes it doesn't. So it will be mutl l'chatchila. You don't have to be worried at all about the possibility of blowing carefully so that you don't rip it. The post can also say, let's say they talk about brushing a shetel in a way that might make a hair be ripped off the netting. So there, I mean, most people don't want that, first of all. So if it's definitely going to cause something to be pulled off, you're not going to do it. But it might happen. It might not happen. What's your goal? Your goal is to make it neat, not to pull it out. So again, since it's not what you intended to do, and it may or may not happen, it'll be mutter to brush it gently, because that's going to be only a davar she'eino miskaver. This concept of psik reisha being asur d'oraisa and davar she'eino miskaver has applications all across Hilchos Shabbos, and this is a lot of times when there's a situation that's a tough situation, this is where Rabbanim usually get creative in terms of finding heterim for different things, to if you could figure out how something could be done indirectly to make it into a davar she'eino miskaver, psik reisha, and therefore these concepts of psik reisha, again, psik reisha means I'm going to cut off the head and definitely the chicken will die, even though I didn't intend for it. That's asur d'oraisa, and davar she'eino miskaver is I didn't intend for it, and it may or may not happen, that makes him mutter. So halacha l'maaseh, you could pull out those paper towels without worrying. Yeah. So, you're talking about hair. So, we'll have to talk about gozes. You're saying that when you brush your hair, let's say with a good brush, it doesn't always tear, pull out a knot or pull out a hair. And therefore, you're saying that any given stroke of a brush should only be a davar she'eino miskaver, because you don't intend to pull out a hair, and even if it, and it doesn't always do it either. That's a good point. We'd have to look into that. Yeah. Yeah.
If for whatever, you accidentally end up ripping out a paper towel or ripping toilet paper without pulling it in and forgetting, is the person allowed to use it or do they have to start again?
Oh, so let's talk about the paper towel. If you rip a paper towel, it's totally fine. Because there was mutter to do. So it's not called what we call Maisa Shabbos. Maisa Shabbos means you're not allowed to get benefit from a person who violated Hilchot Shabbos. Somebody cooked on Shabbos, you're not allowed to eat that food on Shabbos. So here, the person was allowed to pull that paper towel. Oh, it ripped. They were allowed to do it. And therefore, there's nothing wrong with getting hung up. Yeah. Okay, terrific. So, Bez Hashem, next week we have to get to what I thought we'd begin maybe, but we didn't. Opening food packages. That's going to be the next stage of ripping, applying ripping and tearing to food packages. That Bez Hashem will be next week.